So I was thinking all day, what should be the VOD topic? I didn't want to bother you when picking a topic. What should be the topic? I had a few different ideas. I hope I picked the right one. I can't tell you what the topic is. You'll tell me at the end what the topic was. And if it matches what I thought the topic was, then at least that much we got right. Okay, I wanted to start off with a very short idea, just to kick it off. Oz Yavdil Moshe, Parshas Baschanan. It says, Oz Yavdil Moshe, Sholosh Aram, Bever Yardain, Bever Yardain, Mizrach HaShamish. And Moshe divided the three of the Ori Miklat. Fascinating, Sforno, that why did Moshe separate these three, consecrate these three Ori Miklat? He wanted to show them how nechbad Shmiras Mitzvahs is, how important Shmiras Mitzvahs are. Shehikbit l'kayim k'tzas mitzvahs asay. That he tried to be mekayim a little bit of mitzvahs asay. So everybody knows that the Ari Miklat, until they had six, they had none. Now, you needed all six to be muvdal in order for the whole concept of Ari Miklat to work. Now, there's just one problem. Three of them are Eivrei Yardein, and there's three in Eretz Yisrael, except Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going into Eretz Yisrael. So, what was the point of him, I don't know what he did, some kind of act of being mavdil the Ari Miklat, what exactly would be accomplished? And just to deher that, you know, this is like what in Parshas Baschanan, if you go through the psukim, so first he gave them chazara of the whole Musar of Baal Pa'ar, 200,000 were nifter by the chait of Baal Pa'ar. And then right before this, Parshas Baschanan is the laning from Tisha B'Av, which goes through all the terrible things will happen if we don't do the mitzvahs. And then he's doing a, says k'tzas mitzvah, but nothing happened. It's like, you know, you didn't get the mitzvah. It's a k'tzas mitzvah. He did an act, but it had no chalos. It's not like he did something and now you see everyone, you know, going to a mikvah. Like if you make a mikvah, so then people go to the mikvah. But if you like take a shovel and you put a, take, you know, a few, you know, boxes of earth out, then you leave and there's no mikvah for another, you know, they don't see anything. What do they see? So, but nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu, I say, you know, if he took the time to do this, he felt it was going to make an impact. This was an impact. It's not like he did it, okay, he did it ma'isa mitzvah. He was doing it to show laharis li Yisrael manechbad inyan shmiras mitzvahs. So, you know, this is really the drives home the point is that when we do something, it makes a very strong roshan. It's more than what we say. So, just the idea of what it means to be a role model. There's a famous stipler which I can't promise I haven't said over in the past. Somebody went to the stipler and asked them, "How do I get my kid to daven?" And the stipler said, "If you want to teach your kid to daven, daven." It's like, wow, what a chiddush. You know, you have all the shmuzim about davening and how important it is and how people were saved from davening and how it helps and can prove that it helps and it helps for chatzi minimally and you could show them so much. But the ultimate hashpa is to daven.
So what was the k'tzas mitzvah?
The Ari Miklat.
Doing three of them out of the six?
Yeah, because there was no Ari Miklat. There was no chalos of Ari Miklat until you had all six Ari Miklat. So like, what was the point? You're consecrating three, but there's still no Ari Miklat happening. So like, the impact, I'm just saying the impact, I'm not saying there's no impact. I'm not saying, yeah, nothing. But it sounds like minimal, you know, minimal impact. It's not like they see anything. If someone makes a mikvah, and then now people can start going to the mikvah, or someone makes a pair of tefillin, now a person can put on a pair of tefillin. You know, just, but, you know, but he's doing it gufa to show them, you know, to show them. Even a ktsas mitzvah makes such a roshim. So this is what I thought was worthy to talk about, this idea for, that the stipler said, if you want to teach someone to daven, which, you know, I guess as a Rebbe, you know, it was as what does a Rebbe do? He's could be busy disciplining, or he could daven. Which I'm not saying it could be you have a principal who tells you that you have no choice. This is what you need to do. I'm not saying to go against the principal or the boss, but if there's a boss, but lechora, that if that will have more impact. You know, just if the Rebbe would just sort of like get involved with davening, that will have a bigger hashpa than shushing. I assume that's what the stack was saying. If you want to teach someone to daven. It was sincere. I have a few mices I want to say over. I just have to go in order. Like I'm like chalishing to say all at once, so I have to go slow. So I have this written in my notes. It's about now June 21st, 1978. That's a long time ago. So there was a meeting at the 16th Avenue Aguda, and the Camp Magen Avraham was having a staff meeting for all junior counselors and counselors who were going to camp. They didn't have any orientation in camp. The staff went up to camp, like together with the campers, right, a couple hours. One was in the morning, one was on an 8 o'clock bus, one was on a 9 o'clock bus. It may have even been the same bus, I'm not sure. But there was not much orientation in camp. And I remember Rabbi Sachs saying that a counselor has to be the mother, the father, and the Rebbe, which basically means you are the mother, you have to worry about the child's gashmias, the father, you have to provide some discipline. That's how I understood it. And the Rebbe, you have to be the mashpia. You have to teach them. So, and I remember him saying, even if you don't currently, like yesterday, and if you don't currently daven well, but now you have to. You have an obligation. And you're not considered a hypocrite. I remember him telling me, because that's what I was thinking. I don't want to be a hypocrite. You have to be a hypocrite. So the best hechrach is when you have to do it. I love the story, which this for sure I've said over because it's funny. My brother, kid in my brother's bunk, when he told the kid to stop talking once, he told my brother, it's his father's minig is to talk. Kid in camp told my father's minig is to talk. My brother said, oh yeah, it's different. Okay. And I always like to say over, you know, Mr. Max Wasser, Zichron Levracha, was the only man in the shul where I davened who could quiet 300 people in Bnei Yehuda. Because Shabbos Mincha, I don't know, for whatever reason, Mazel, that shul is where everyone davened Shabbos afternoon Mincha. You know, and there must have been 300-400 people there. Everyone was yapping, talking. He took it upon himself to go around telling people, you know, motioning people to stop talking. And the only, can you imagine a balabas? He was a balabas. It's the Max Wasser. He was an accountant. And can you imagine, you know, people like taking that? He went around, if you were talking, he went around. There were a lot of people talking. But when he went around talking, people knew he was a role model, you know, davener. So Mele, he got the schusset, in my opinion, of 300 people davening. Because when he went around like this, I remember like this, people listened.
He wasn't davening.
He was doing chazaras shatz.
The fact that he had wasn't from Ashba.
Yeah, no, just that I think the hashpa was the fact that it was him, and no one else could have done that. And everyone else, they would punch him in the stomach, tied him up, poured schnapps in the back room over his head, and locked the door from the outside. That's what they did in that shul. You know, but when Mr. Wasser went around trying to keep quiet, like they, people were respectful.
He was sincere.
He could be. He was sincere. He himself was a role model, but you know, davener. So when he went like this, it was bothering him. So people listened.
So maybe we should do both. We should daven, and then once the kids see that he's sincere, yeah, well, davening, then he should.
Yeah, I listen. Baal Bus, you know, you can have. Yeah, I remember when we started the Shabbos Minyan here. What year was that? 05, 04. So we started the Shabbos Minyan. So we didn't want to. We thought the boys had enough of the school all week. So the deal was that on Shabbos the Minyan was going to be more. The boys were going to run the Minyan, and I'm not sure if it's done 100% how the original bylaws were for the Shabbos High School Minyan. Could be changed a little bit. But originally, the Rebbeim were Dafka not going to sit in front of the Minyan here. And they were going to run the Minyan, get the Bali Tfila, get the Rei Torah. And also, if anybody was talking, they were going to go around. They would, you know, take care of it. No Rebbe would tell someone to be quiet on Shabbos. I don't know if they do it during the week either. It could be no one talks anymore. I don't know. I'm not the principal. But
have you made it sound like the sincerity mixed with the discipline is better than just having hashpah and actions?
Well, not the sincerity. I don't mean sincerity. Even someone who's not a good, it's that the fact, not just sincere, just that that wasn't, the disciple was saying you have to daven. Mr. Wasser wasn't doing that instead of davening. Two stories are not in steer with each other. But I'm saying different nekudas. One is that just watching someone daven is a tremendous hashpa. And Mimela, someone who is role model dominant and tells you something, you have more impact. Separate nekuda. I didn't say you can never tell someone what to do, but I'm saying the fact that if he wouldn't himself have been such a role model, then that wouldn't have worked. The people weren't running up to Mr. Wasser to watch him daven and then keep him quiet. That wasn't working, so he had to try something else. So I used to use as a barber, Ralph. Ralph the barber, he was by the 8th Avenue Publix. And he was, I think, Cuban. And when he told me that he's retiring soon. And he's buying an apartment in the Mimosa. Anybody here live in Miami Beach? No. So the Mimosa is a condominium on Collins Avenue in the 50s. It's basically, I'm not saying this with any kind of sarcasm, but it's basically like rich Hungarians, Jews, live in the Mimosa. So that's what it's known. It's like very expensive, and it's like mostly Jewish. So I said, I don't know how I knew that, but I knew that. So I said, Ralph, the Mimosa? You know it's not a Spanish-speaking Cuban clientele. He goes, yeah, I know, it's Jewish. So I said, why are you buying a condominium in a Jewish building? So he says, I'm giving haircuts here for over 30 years. I've seen all the different nationalities. The nicest, most honest people are the Jewish people. And I told my wife, I'm retiring. I don't want problems. I'm going to buy an apartment in the Mimosa. That is pretty impressive. That is pretty impressive. I don't remember anymore who said this, Shmuz, on Shabbos. I don't want to say one of you guys said this Shmuz on the Legacy Shabbos. Maybe it was Batal, the Shmuz of Ma Ben Shchuna L'Shchuna. It was Batal. Did you say that Shmuz, but Avraham Avinu and, you know, the difference between Avraham Avinu and Moshe? Yes, that's such a great raya. Also, here Avraham Avinu, 168 years, what'd you say? 164 years beforehand had lived in Haran. See, I was paying attention. He lived in Haran, and the whole Maisa with with Rachel happened, and nobody bothered them, but by Midian, by Moshe, they were bothering the daughters of Midian, and Chazal say, the Medrash says, even though you quote a Mizrahi, but I know it as a Medrash, it's because of Avraham Avinu lived in Haran. Now, Avraham lived in Haran. I assure you, Avraham Avinu was not giving shear to these people's. These were the shepherds. These were the truck drivers of society. These were not the. I'm not against any truck drivers. I'm just saying that these were not the elite of society. It was the lower echelon of society, and it's doubtful that their great grandfathers, great 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 grandfathers, were on the upper echelons either. But you see, the Koach of Hashpah, of Avraham Avinu, lived there, like the Lower East Side. Nowadays, even today, Moshe passed away in the mid-80s, 86. You know, how many years is that? That's 5 years, 32 years later. Lower East Side still has the Hashpah of Moshe Feinstein. There's a certain, parts of his personality that are still there. And that's amazing ashpa people have. I found. From my notes that I didn't say over yet from the Term of Sarah Convention, so I was working on this topic. So Rabbi David, Rabbi Hillel David said, the question that was presented to him, just to tell you the whole beginning, they were asking him about extrinsic rewards. Okay, so he quoted a Sefer Rokeach, and Hilchos Shavuos is brought down that there used to be a minhag that you would bring the young child to the cheder, and the Melamed would give him sweets. So that was his, if David knows Kol HaTor Kulo. And he asked about extrinsic rewards. That they used to give him sweets. That's obviously extrinsic. Candy is extrinsic rewards. And he basically said, you're welcome to argue and bring kashas from, Rabbi Hoyman session, But he said that for younger kids, whatever works. If it works, you could do it. I'm sure there are certain things that are too much. He wasn't really hacking on that, but he went right at that point. He said over this story, which is I remembered it. Baruch Hashem, I was able to find it. I was able to find my notes, and I was able to find the story in my notes. A lot of Nisan and Yozchus. I found it tonight. So there's a story that he said there was a bacher who learned by him in his beis medrash for 5 years. He had a small beis medrash in the late 70s and 80s. So there was a boy that learned by him for 5 years. He says, in the 5 years, Rabbi David said, he did not waste 5 minutes. In 5 years' time, he did not waste 5 minutes of Seder. And he was always learning. And when he entered Shaduchim, for the first time, he sat down to talk to Rabbi David. And Rabbi David found out then that he was a Baal Tshuva. Rabbi David didn't know. He's a Baal Tshuva. So Rabbi David asked him, What made you frum? You have to hear this answer. He said he had a Rebbe who he never spoke to outside of class. But the Rebbe had a passion for halacha. He says he remembers he asked Rav Moshe Shilas. He says Rav Moshe Shilas that says when he asked Shilas he didn't know the answer to. It means that Rav Moshe didn't ask. He even asked Rav Moshe Shilas he didn't know the answer to. I don't know if this means Rav Moshe didn't know the answer to, or I don't know. Even asked him passion for halacha, and even asked Rav Moshe Shilas he didn't know what's the even. Okay, I forgot. I'm gonna go crazy. Okay. It's not so important, I guess. He said when it came time to figure out his life, whether he's going to be a Shomer Mitzvahs, he couldn't go against his Rebbe. His Rebbe didn't say anything to him, but how could he do something against his Rebbe? His Rebbe had such a passion for halacha, he couldn't go against his Rebbe. Then Rabbi David said a different story that he heard about someone who was a Baal Tshuva, and when he was asked what made him a Baal Tshuva, this is such a scary story, you'd make your hair stand. He said at his bar mitzvah, Rav Baruch Ber, Zechanah Levracha, came to his bar mitzvah and he danced with him at his bar mitzvah with such ahava, and he smiled at me so much at his bar mitzvah that he became frum. Says that's what made him frum. It made such a roshim on him that he couldn't get that out of his head. You see, you go to a, you know, I read this story. You know, I didn't think I had time to go to Sammy Robles Vart. But I read the story, I jumped up and I saw the story, and I raced over, it was 9:38, and I raced over to the, Beis Menachem, and I ran in, I found the Chassan, I gave him such a hug. I was the happiest person. I said, I am so excited. I'm so sorry I can't stay longer. I am so excited for you. I wish the Mazda of his brother, and I left. And I came right here. But I probably wouldn't have pushed myself to go. But wow, you know, we don't realize we have such an impact on people. Yeah, you know, you'd be schlepped to chasanas. You know, I'm somebody chasanas. Later time you'll have chasanas, bar mitzvahs. You can make such a roshim on somebody just, you know, one dance at the, okay, we're not Rav Baruch Ber, so okay, Rav Baruch Ber has more things going for him, but we have other things, you know. Rav Baruch Ber, is there a better site? I follow Rabbi Glad. If he's going to the Simcha Shoeva, I just follow him, just watch Rabbi Glad dance. It's such an amazing, just watch him dance. It's such a hashpa. You have such a hashpa on someone. He said that high school Rebbeim, though, should not need prizes. Right, David said, the passion of the Rebbe's learning should be enough. That's pretty powerful. That means when you're learning with a kid, so if you show such excitement for the learning, you can't put it on. If you make that part of you, just the learning will be enough. Just the excitement. The kid will see that. That'll be enough.
Does it work?
It doesn't work in 5 minutes. But over time, it does work. If you show a Talmud that you're pumped, all the time, that learning gets you high, that when you are learning with him, that's the most exciting and you makes you happy, yes, it works. That has to be consistent and has to be real. And Okay, just to fit out, I'm not finished my topic, because I finished this part of these my last parts of my notes, which is not so as relevant. Can a Rebbe embarrass a kid if he misbehaves in class? Rabbi David said, no, a Rebbe must love his child. You wouldn't do that to your child, you can't do that to your student. You can't. Now, halachically, is it permissible for a Rebbe who has to embarrass his child? You know, a Rebbe is allowed to embarrass a child, theoretically, but he said practically you shouldn't do that. You know, you have to love the child, you should not embarrass the child. And they also could, is it okay to have a knas system? This was a Tormasoric Shaila. Can you have a knas system? And he said no. You're giving a knas to the parents, not to the children. That doesn't help. And also do that. And if a child ruins school property, are you allowed to charge him for that? No. You're cutting his pot there. What happens? He breaks your window. Too bad. Chazal say, Cherishot v'katan tikiyas amra, because they're potter on the zikin, and what should you do? Raise a lot of money.
Let's say it's high school.
High school is already chayiv. Cool.
So saying then you could charge it?
That's not a knas. That's not a knas. He's a mazik. Okay, let's go back to the thing. So I was thinking that if it's so important to be a mashpia, we also have to be mushpa. We have to be ready to be mushpa also, because this person has to have two roles in life. Yes, we're already at the point where you could be a great role model for a high school kid, maybe be counselors, but you know, you also have to be a base kibbutz to be mushpa, to receive the hashpah. Not just giving the hashpah, we have to receive the hashpah. There was a big tain on Lot that he left. It says he parred no me'alai. He left. Avram Avinu said, we have to separate. And Lot separated, and he was punished for that. It was a Tainan Lot that he left. It was a big Tainan Lot. So the kasha is, what do you want from Lot? Avraham Avinu said, we have to split. You go left, I go right. You go right, I go left. What's the Tainan Lot? But who nefret chila? He should have made the first step, because that already showed, you know, that he doesn't want it. He should have tried to be more shbah from Avraham Avinu. And even that, at the point already where he was in Sodom, and he was going to Sodom, he was, not being careful on Gzela. But still, at that point already, had he been machshav, just the idea of Hashpa, he could have done it. I was very fortunate. I had very close kesher with a lot of Marabayim, who I'm still in touch with. My 8th grade Rebbe, my 11th grade Rebbe, Rabbi Miller, my 9th grade Rebbe, who's Nifter, Rabbi Edelman. You know, you have Rebbeim, you're racking up a lot of Rebbeim now. So you're at the point where, okay, if you could just, you have to go out of your way to keep a kesher. I want to discuss with you different ways to keep a kesher, but that kesher makes very, very important. They say that only Shevet Levi was loyal to Moshe by the Eagle, because they felt an extra kesher to Moshe Rabbeinu. So keeping a kesher with a Rebbe could be very important to us, because you'll continue to have the Rashba. I want to discuss a few suggestions of what we could do. The end of the year, and then everyone's coming back. How do you keep a kesher? You know, it's not always so easy to do that. The Reshiva spoke about he tried for 20 years. His father was Nifter, he was 24 years old. So 20 years he was pushing to be, he was Rashiva, and he struck out, major strikeout. He had no Talmidim, not much to speak for. It was the early 1960s, and he was trying for over 20 years, 22 years, And that's it. He's going to pack up and move to Eretz Yisrael. He said this over many times. He wanted to become a posek. He would have been, you know, let's say 60 and 40, 100. He'd been like Rabbi Yashiv, the same age as Rabbi Yashiv. Maybe Rabbi Yashiv, a couple years older. But he would have been Rabbi Yashiv. So he, let's say if he was 24, 1941, it's now, let's say, 60, 80 years later. 80 and 40 is 120. Yeah, you know, about. So he had a netiya for psak. Rashiv did have a netiya for psak, and we used to ask Rashiv, Shailas and Archayim, he paskened. I mean, he wasn't busy with psak all day, but you could tell that you just tell how a person is nota. He had a netiya for psak, and that's what he wanted to do. He thought he'd be very good. And he thought it would be necessary for Klal Yisrael to have a posek, and he was going to go. But his father's gnawing at him, wanting him to, you know, don't give up the, you know, the dream, the dream to be able to spread Torah in America, you know, he felt would be lost. And so he didn't. So I have wrote down a few ideas to keep a kesher with Rebbeim. And then you can go back, and it doesn't have to, you know, I'm not just talking about this year's Rebbe. Okay, this year's Rebbe, you're continuing, you're older, but even, you know, Rebbeim that you had, there are ways to keep kesherim. A few ideas. If you have any notes, shmuzim, vadim, you could write over a sugya, or a shmuz, or a vad, and give it to him. You want to know, I say this, like, I'm just looking back. I developed a close kesher with Rabbi Edelman, the bochen for the yeshiva. He was Rashiva in New Haven, back before Rabbi Kolta was the Rashiva. Rabbi Edelman was Rashiva. And I still call him. I called him, you know, recently with a shaila I had. So that's pretty amazing. I mean, I was there in like the 80s, branching in the early 80s. So, you know, I didn't have him as a, he didn't give me shear. Well, I was there for 3 weeks, he gave shear. I was there, I think, two times or three times for a month each in New Haven. I developed a kesher with him. But what cemented the relationship? What did that? So I remember we were learning Ksubas. I was there for a month. And I spent a couple of days, and I wrote over the sugya. I wrote over in like ha'aras, like kashan teretz, kashan teretz. I handed in like a. I was there for a month, like, or 3 weeks over Hanukkah when she went to Eretz Yisrael. I left on December 25th. I remember it was December 25th because I went to the pharmacy to. I wanted to gift wrap it, all my cards. I had like 25, 30 cards, 30 ha'aras. And I the only wrapping paper they had was like this Christmas wrapping paper, like red and green, with a bow, the Christmas tree and Santa Claus. So I remember I wrapped it, and I was going, and I wasn't thinking. That's the only thing they had, and I gave it to him. I said, Rebbe, before I leave, I want to give a present. So he smiled. He said, it's the first time I got Christmas present. But he opened it up, and you know, and now he has his aras on Shabbos. He didn't have any time to write that right over his, you know, his kedushim. I wrote it over. I gave it to him. So I gave it to him, but he had such appreciation that I did that. I don't know if he needed it. He probably remembers everything, but you know, I felt close. I felt I had a right to be close to him. I don't know. So that was very helpful. Calling Rebbeim before Yontif, sending Shalach Manas. Tell you another why I'm so close to Rabbi Krauss. So Rabbi Krauss is, you know, Mardasra and Maganav, but he was my 8th grade Rebbe. And my father had a takeout food store in Borough Park, and he said, if you want to send Shalach Manas to your Rebbeim, come by the store and pack up Shalach Manas and bring it over to him. But you know how it is, it's a schlep, and I didn't have a car. I was, you know, in high school, and had a, you know, had a mooch a ride, and he lived in Flatbush, and My brother and I went, you know, we're going to go to Turabayim, we'll do Turabayim. So we did Rabbi Miller, that we had a walk, it was about a 20-minute walk, and Rabbi Krauss, Sukhon Lebracha, and Rabbi Krauss, we had our mooch rides and go there and then take our bus back, and went to his house, we boom shlach on us. It was a little bit, you know, awkward, you know, it's like Moses, I went in, you know, sat down for a minute, wanted me to have a whatever, sing a niggin, and then we left. And I found out the next day that an hour before I came to the house, his kids came down with chicken pox. And they were supposed to go to Far Rockaway or Williamsburg or somewhere for the Purim Suza. And they had just, when the kids came down with chicken pox, they had just hung up the phone when I rang the bell to her parents, I don't remember who, that they can't come for the Purim Suda. And they had no food in the house. They had nothing. They had scrambled eggs. They had nothing. And just then, the doula rang, and we came in with, you know, four barbecue chickens and a dozen kalek. And I went to my father's store. My father didn't tell me what to take or not take. I didn't know nothing. I was packing up stuff. I mean, bringing in these two bags of food. We didn't know. It was marvelous, amazing. So every time I see him, he's like, raves about that, you know, Shah Manas. I didn't know that, but I think he would have been happy doing that, his kids getting chicken pox. But ask Shilas, if you need advice, call Rebbeim. And you know, maybe different Rebbeim are good at different things. And call them, write to them, email them if they do that, and ask advice. It you'll get some advice, but even without the advice, it keeps a kesher. This is what you had to do if you want to get close to Rosh Yeshiva in his later years. But it's a good idea anyway, stam does lishma, but you could do it to get a kesher. Offer to assist them. A lot of times people, this I said over, like they trying to figure out what they can get out of the Rebbe. Can you learn with me? Could you know, this with me? I don't know. But sometimes the way to get close is not by learning with them. You get close by offering, if you see they need something, or if you don't see they need something, figure out what they need. Nachman Seltzer writes that in a lot of his books. He writes that people make that mistake. You have to also realize that not every Rebbe talks easily. I love telling the story. So Rabbi Heshi Glass, who's a big mechanech in the United States, he lived on my block in Borough Park. And he's much older than me. You know, I don't know how old, much older. 10 years older than me, 8 years older than me. And he told me, oh, wow. He learned in Chavetz Chaim, I don't know how many years, not the whole system, but I think he was still there when I was leaving high school to go to Eretz Yisrael. Oh my gosh, you're going to Chavetz Chaim? Gosh, Rabbi Kinnerik, he's such a gadol. You have to develop a kesher with him. I said, how do you develop a kesher with him? It's easy. Just go and just sit down next to him. You'll develop a kesher. So I was a very pretty naive, gullible kid in my youth. Not anymore. I'm not as nice and not so gullible. So Rabbi Kinnerik, I heard of Rabbi Kinnerik. That's so close. So I came to yeshiva. I saw a Kinnerik. You know, he didn't look the schmoozy type, but okay. So I came to yeshiva, and like the second day of yeshiva, he was sitting at a table in the Beis Medrash, and I took a chair and I sat on the other side of him, and he told me just sit down, it'll just happen. So I sat down, and I didn't want to say anything disrespectful, so I was just sitting there. And after like a minute, if you know a Kinnerik, he says, "Do you want something?" So I said, no. He said, why don't you go learn? I said, okay. And I left. And I was so embarrassed. So don't do that. There's not every Rebbe talks easily. So you have to just know. You know, you have to find Rabbi Kinnerik. You know, you have to have a list of shilas. You ask him a couple of shilas, a couple of questions. You know, questions in learning, hashkafa. You have to give them a reason to talk. You know, make an appointment, you know, to speak, and then between then and the appointment, find something to speak about, and also to visit. just a stop visit, you know, just showing up. The guys, alumni over here, and even if they didn't develop such a kesher, but afterwards they cement the relationship by coming to visit. Doesn't necessarily have to be if, you know, to visit where people are, the Rebbeim. It's not so much for the Rebbeim. I'm saying from that end. I'm sure the Rebbeim appreciate it. I'm just saying for ourselves, it's very helpful to try and stay on top of it. I still, like, you know, I try to call Rabbi Bash, my menal from high school. I call him up. I met his sons at the Talmud Torah convention. We were, you know, last year I was sick, and he called me to find out how I'm feeling. It's like, you know, it's you want to continue the relationship, and we need, you know, life is, you know, tough sometimes. You want to be able to have different people. You know, you call someone, and I know him from my youth, so I could talk to him about it. It's not going to get to different circles. You know, sometimes you want different people to talk to about things. So it's very good. So, just to summarize, that we have a tremendous opportunity ourselves to be big mashpiyim. Just little things that we do, just davening, and dancing at someone's chasana, and to, you know, just the passion of our learning. All these things have a tremendous, tremendous hashpah that could last even 164 years, like what Sal says later. And at the same time, to realize that we also are mushpa, and we should take advantage of the people that we have, people that are going to Eretz Yisrael. Oh my gosh, you have such a tremendous opportunity. You know, take, at the very least, get one of these Israeli pads, very small, these, you know, keep it in your pocket. And when you go somewhere and you see something, like, write it down. I had things I didn't mention before, like, I got inspired by those little things. In Tel Aviv, in the Ben Gurion Airport, by the sink, there's a washing cup, you know, like a chain to the sink. Like, where would you see it? You know, it doesn't look like a Haredi place over there, but there's a sink in the airport. Someone put the sink there and they tied it on, you know, in Tel Aviv. That's a Prince Hashba. You know, the story of what's that? I mean, they're not as from as the Ben Gurion Airport. And you know, like, the story I told, you know, recently, where Moshe Chait was sitting at a bus stop in Tel Aviv, and a street cleaner, a Chiloni street cleaner, non-from street cleaner, no yarmulke, no nothing, he's sitting there waiting for, like, the last bus to go back to Yerushalayim. And the street cleaner bends down, it's like deserted, and he picks up like a half a roll, which was on the ground. He picks it up, like right in front of Moshe Chait, and puts it on the bench, and he looks at Moshe Chait and says, "Ein mavir nala ochman." So Moshe Chait, I heard the story from Moshe Chait. He told the story at Avad, and he said, "You see that? You know, this Chiloni street cleaner, you know, taught me," and he knew the halacha, but he said, "You have to be careful, halacha. Since I heard that story, I heard that story in 1979. If anytime I'm at a bus stop, deserted in Tel Aviv, and I see a roll, I pick it up. No, but I do. I always remember this. Every time I see something like a gluska yafa, you know, I borrow a term from Pesach, I bend down, pick it up because of this story. This story has meaning. Wow, it's chiloni, you know, what do you call it? Like, wow, these are halachas. You have to live by them. So we should take advantage of what we could offer and what we could gain. And I don't know if this made